Bow. Bow. Hello and welcome to Hybrid Powered by Chinksy Media. Now, it's that time of the week again. We're here for Mikel Arteta's pre-Crystal Palace press conference. Mikel Arteta has been speaking to the press ahead of our clash against Crystal Palace in the Premier League this Sunday. We go into the fixture having won our last six in all competitions, and our manager spoke about our form, this weekend's opponent, and much more. On the latest team news following our win over Atletico Madrid, not much. Big Gabby had to leave the pitch with an issue, and he hasn't been able to train yet. So let's see how he evolves in the next 24 hours to see whether he's available or not for the weekend. Mind games. Mikel does this thing a lot. I always talk about in press conferences where the fact that we've got another training session or two between the press conference and the match means that obviously he won't be able to feedback the information as to whether he'll be fit or not. So now that's got Oliver Glasner scratching his head whether to think Gabriel will be playing or not. I mean, I'm even bamboozled by it. But if you were to ask me, I think he will probably play, and I think it's just a ploy by Arteta to keep his opposition manager guessing. However, even if he's not fit, Christian Mosquera is waiting in the wings, and he's a more than able deputy if necessary. On longer-term injuries to Madueke, Odegaard, Havertz and Jesus, they are progressing really well. They are starting to do certain activities. They are all super willing to be available as quickly as possible. But at the moment, none of them are in contention in the next week or so. Well, I've seen Jesus looking really fit and raring to go. Probably you're looking at next month for a return to the squad, to a matchday squad perhaps. Brighton probably come a bit too soon for him. However, if we get past Brighton, which will be a tough game, I wouldn't be surprised if he does feature in the next round, if we get there. As for Noni Madueke, a fit and raring to go Noni Madueke is an unbelievable player, whether it be from the bench or starting. So that's a great proposition to have waiting in the wings. In terms of Martin Odegaard, like I said in the previous podcasts, he needs to take time out and get himself fit, because there's no point coming back, cutting short your injury layoff and breaking down again. Whether it be you need to take another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month off, more, to make sure your fitness is on point, because to get back in this squad now is going to take you at your best. So my recommendation is hold tight, get yourself fit, and when you are, tell the boss, I'm ready. On conceding just 3 goals in our first 12 games, and this, there's a motivation to beat Chelsea's record. We want these kind of records. We have been getting a lot of them. At the end, we want it to bring the silverware and the trophies. But obviously, the more we can produce, I think the closer we are going to be to achieving what we want to do. And that defensive record is very good, but we need to be consistent. It's only just the start of the season. The aim is to continue improving things, which we can still do a lot of to do even better. Well, put it this way. If we beat Chelsea's defensive record, we win the league. Simple as that. There's no way you concede 14 or 15 goals and not win the league, especially if you're a good team. However, previously we've scored 89 goals, 91 goals or so, which was our best season 2 seasons ago under Arteta, and we didn't win the league. Therefore, it tells you there's a certain standard. So if you can, I think it's equally correlated, the fact that you're a good team, and if you can have that type of defensive record, you're going to consequently score goals at the other end. Therefore, you're going to win the title. You're going to amass enough points that will be more than your direct opponent in second and third, which is likely to be Liverpool, Man City or Chelsea. Therefore, to summarise that, if Arsenal concede 14, 15 goals in the Premier League, they will be lifting the trophy, guaranteed. On Eze coming up against his former side this weekend, it's a big game for us. Especially last season, we dropped some points, and it's the fourth game in a row that we're going to play against opponents that we drop points against. And this season, we've been able to beat them. So our focus is on that. We know that for Ebbs, it's going to be a very special match with the history and what he did for Palace. But the focus is on the team. Yeah, it's going to be an important game for Eze, and hopefully he starts him. I mean, I don't want no weird mind games where you put him on the bench. I think it's essential that
Eze starts, because he's the type of character that would love to start that game and to kind of prove to his previous employers that he still is the guy. He has obviously had a quite few games, but I believe in him to play this game and play it right and probably score or get an assist. On if our previous games against Palace forms part of our messaging for this one. If we want a very different outcome, we better do very different things than we did last year, especially in these fixtures. We know what Palace are doing, what Oliver Glasner is doing for the football club, and the way they are getting results. So it's going to be a really tough match, but we're going to play again in front of our crowd, and we are confident that if we hit our level, we have a big chance to win it. So it's essentially saying if we play well, we'll win, which is right, because if we play well, we beat 99% of teams in world football, because we're in the top three teams in world football right now, if not first or second. But that's for another day. Palace, they're not in the greatest form right now. They lost yesterday to AEK Larnaca at home. They did put out a strong side. The likes of Maxence Lacroix, Marc Guay, he played. Ismaïla Sarr, Jeremy Pino, Jean-Philippe Mateta played as well. So, you know, they played five or six of their first team, and there's only a three-day turnaround. So, essentially, we've had 5 days to prepare for this game. We're in a rich vein of form. We're at home in front of our fans. We are conceding zilch. We hardly conceded shots on goal. Everything's pointing towards a home win. However, football doesn't always work out like that. On the challenge of leaving players out of the team, given the strength of the squad, there are two sides to it. One, the emotional part, and my attachment with the individual, with the person, and I would love to play all of them. But the second one, obviously, without a question of doubt, I'd rather have this situation than the situation we had in the last few years when, at some point, we were very short in numbers. So we have created a very strong environment, a really competitive and supportive environment that hopefully can challenge to be a very competitive team in every game. That's the aim, and that's what we want to achieve, and we just all go towards that direction. Yeah, so Arteta's essentially comparing the dynamics of this season and this squad compared to squads in recent seasons, like last season especially, where we were short in numbers. We had left back upon left back on the bench. We had youth academy prospects on the bench in Champions League semi-finals, which is absurd. However, this season, we've got a strong roster of about 25, 26 players. And that's not even including people like Gabriel Jesus and Max Dalman, who are probably the joker in the packs, because there's people are acting like Jesus doesn't exist anymore. When they mention Arsenal's second string 11, they put Havertz in there and not Jesus. But Jesus looks like he's fit and almost back in contention. With Max Dalman, he's 15 years old. So every time he gets in the matchday squad, it's an absolute achievement for me. So, yeah, the squad is very strong, to summarise that. But, yeah, like Arteta said, you'd rather have a strong squad with people in the stands than have a weak squad with youth players on the bench. On Mateta's form and how to stop him, first of all, it's what they do as a team, their level of organisation. They have very clear intentions of how they want to attack and which moment they use to attack and hurt opponents. So stopping the source is probably the best way. When you get into certain situations with them or with him 1v1, you know that he's very prolific and he's been very, very successful, especially recently. So trying to avoid that. Well, two things. I think his main source to goal, or main sources to goal, are through Adam Wharton and Daniel Munoz on the right wing. So we need to stop Palace getting the ball, essentially. So if we dominate the game and kind of have a good shape to kind of, you know, neutralize the possible transitions they may create, because they're going to have to play on the break, I think we're going to obviously stop him getting the ball. Another thing is the fact that William Saliba is Mateta's teammate, so he'll know how he is, having trained with him. But we'll know how he is anyway, because we've played against him over the years. So I think if we can kind of dominate them, he will essentially be starved of the ball, just like Julian Alvarez was in previous weeks. So therefore, I don't really expect him to be much of a threat if we play properly and kind of dominate the game. And when we don't have the ball, be in a shape where he doesn't have an angle to receive a pass. Because I think he will be a threat in the air if Munoz has an opportunity to cross the ball in. On what the conversation with Jokeres was like after his two goals on Tuesday, He didn't need a conversation. He just needed a hug and just look at him and enjoy how happy he was after the game. And I think we were all very happy because he fully deserves that. Yeah, I mean, I've been assessing Gyökeres. I feel like he's a kind of unassuming character. Behind the scenes, he's probably talks, but on the pitch, he's single-minded. He doesn't really talk. He's like a robot, you know, shoot to kill. Doesn't really do dialogue on the pitch. But I feel like I've noticed he's had got a kind of respect with people like Gabriel, Lewis Skelly. And obviously you've got the Nordic region players with Norgaard, Odegaard. I'm sure there's probably a friendship there. But on the pitch, he's single-minded and just wants to score. You know, he's kind of in the zone on the pitch. So he's not one for hugs and talks and chats and small talk. On the pitch, doesn't really talk. You know, he's focused. But off the pitch, as I saw his interview with Michael Richards and Thierry Henry, different person. So that's probably where his personality is. But when the game is on, when he's in game mode, the personality switches off and it's just score, win, get off the pitch, and that's that. And if he's concerned that we have only 5 goals from open play so far, damn, no, not at all, because I don't see football like open play and set pieces. I see the game in a different way. Okay, so I've noticed whenever Arteta's vague and blunt, he doesn't like the question. This is a 2-sentence response. No, not at all. I see the game in a different way. All right. He didn't like that question. On how we've performed our set pieces, or should I say how we've perfected our set pieces, with work. First of all, creating the culture, giving that part of the game the importance that it has, understanding that, again, football is evolving and the opponents are behaving against us. We have to maximise certain things that happen very frequently. So something that happens very frequently has a lot of value to us. So trying to maximise that and be effective. So when he's saying frequently, he's obviously often said that a team that has loads of corners are a team that's dominating the game, which is actually a good point. So therefore, if you're obviously probing and pressing, having shots which are taking deflections, it's going to consequently lead to more corners. So the more corners you have, the more opportunity that we have for people like Declan Rice and Bukayo Saka, dead ball specialists, to pull it in accurate, unbelievable positions for our great headers of the ball, Julian Timber, Gabriel, William Saliba, to be able to try and connect with it. And we've also got people like Eberechi Eze on the edge of the box ready to strike, like he did against us, from a corner, right in front of me, in March, April time, to strike. And hopefully he has the opportunity to do that. I fancy him to get a goal and assist on Sunday, by the way. All right. On the point when he thought it would be smart to home in on set pieces, 10 years ago, I think it has to be. I wasn't here, but 10 years ago, I said it's a massive thing to do that. And I have started to have a vision. He's a visionary, guys. He's a visionary. And try to implement a method and try to be surrounded by the best people to deliver that. Wow, okay. 10 years ago, I'm pretty sure it was at Man City. So I don't really recall Man City being dead ball experts, but that's an interesting statement there. On if we're trying to replicate Wenger's success with a tight back four. I go back through the history of football in general, and the teams that have had the best defensive record most of the time, except for the last 3 seasons in the Premier League, which we did. Normally, you win the league, but just go against those stats. But the bigger, stronger we are in that foundation, the bigger the probability of winning games is. Yeah, I think I touched on this already. If you concede 14, 15 goals, you win the league. But I think in terms of the fact that the teams with the best defensive record usually win the league, with the exception of the last 3 seasons, well, they probably almost invariably have the best attacking record as well. So as a consequence, as a team, they probably have the best attacking, score the most goals, and concede the least goals, because they're probably by far the best team in the league. And that's probably, you know, reflected in the stats. You know, Man City, for instance, probably scoring like things like 90 to 100 goals and conceding like 20 goals, because they've just been by far and away the best team. I think that's what it is usually. On if it's tempting not to change too much when things are going well. They are far from perfect and there are a lot of things we must do better. Obviously, there are a lot of things that we're doing very, very well and we need to maintain that. So it's just about understanding that the margins to win football games at this level are very small. In certain moments we have lost, in certain moments we have fully deserved to win them. But that's not going to be the same trajectory all the way in the season, and we need to be prepared for that. So the more alert we are, the more urgency we have, the more desire we have for the next game, we're going to be in a better place to win the game. Yeah, I mean, Arteta doesn't really tend to tinker much with things, and I don't really envisage he will for Sunday. If he was to or is to, I think he makes a few changes, one or two max. Ricardo Calafiori coming in at left back. He's going to have to be alert because he's going to be up against Sara Munoz, who are probably, you know, that's the side of the pitch where Palace are probably at their most potent. And that's obviously the source to go for Mateta. One or two changes, a few tweaks, and then we should be all right for me, because we can make the changes against Brighton in midweek. On the importance of the Emirates Stadium atmosphere in a title race, key, capital, one of the most important things, and I love that because we don't expect supporters to turn up to the stadium. We want them just to play the game with us, which is very different. In order to do that, you have to be in your seat with a certain behaviour, with a certain body language, and it's a good test. Sunday at 2 p.m. How we're going to turn up for a big Champions League game, if we're going to go another step and do something that we didn't do last year, everybody has to turn up to the stadium with that mindset. So that's what I want to see. Yeah, I mean, it's important that we do provide a great atmosphere. For me, actually looking back, being in the stadium on Tuesday, I didn't realise at the time that, yo, this is the best atmosphere I've been in present at Arsenal. But coming out of it and assessing it, I realised, yeah, that was a proper atmosphere. That was an amazing, it's probably the best we played, maybe this season, best result anyway. But yeah, for me, that atmosphere was the best I've been at present. I mean, I've never felt so good at a game. So hopefully we can kind of, you know, replicate at least 10% of that. And if we do, it'll be a good atmosphere again. On what it's like to play against a former club. There is something in your tummy. There is history. There are a lot of emotions. There are very close relationships. You might think once you step in there and go with that mindset, someday you have even more will to win because you made that decision to be successful and achieve something else in your career. And I'm sure Ebs is going to be ready for that. Yeah, the type of character Eberechi Eze is, I think he's just focused, you know, he's ready to do what he needs to do on the pitch, and everything else after that will be after the 90 minutes where you can reacquaint yourself with former colleagues, friends like Mark Guehi, and you know, you might have a word with Steve Parrish and things like that. But on the during the game, it's work, you know, you need to win the game for your childhood club, for the club that's paying your wages, and you have a duty to us to improve because the last few performances haven't been your best. But like I said already, I trust you to return to your best form and do the job against Palace. On if he saw where the game was going regarding set pieces 10 years ago. I went to City with the best manager in the world and I could see where we could have improvements, and it was clear because at some point I was doing that and I wasn't the best person in the world to do it. So if I'm not the best person in the world to do it and the best method to do it, there are ways to improve it. And you can see straight afterwards when it started to happen. But it's not only obsessed with that, I'm the same with the defensive part in every transition. I want to be the best. When it comes to chaos, I want to be the best. When it comes to positional attack, the best. When it comes to low blocks, the best. And that's the eagerness to constantly find ways to develop your team, to evolve your team, and to give your players more tools to be unpredictable and especially more efficient. It's funny because up until about 2-3 years ago, Mikel Arteta used to always say City was the best team, Liverpool were the best team or one of the best teams, or Pep Guardiola is the best manager. He stopped saying that about 2 years ago because we've probably been the best team over those few years in the last two, but for whatever reason, we've fallen short. Last season was a shame. This season, once again, we're probably the best team, but we need to show it. And the only way to prove it is with stats. Otherwise, you can't say you're the best team if you're not emerging as victors, because history only remembers the winners. On Rice's set-piece taking ability, again, I heard some quotes that he made that this season his position has changed a little bit. And I disagree with that because his position has evolved. Okay. So, it depends what you class a change in evolution as, because you can argue it's the same thing. And he is becoming a total player. A total player has to be able to do as many things as possible, and he has the capacity to do that. So that's to evolve a player, to start to bring something else to the team, and especially when you talk about scoring goals, expecting the opposition goal, even better. And he's been instrumental in our improvement in that part of the game. I wonder what he means. I think maybe it's a sense that Rice is probably playing slightly more withdrawn, probably slightly more next to Zubimendi, in a sense, with obviously Eze playing more centrally, as opposed to Rice being a box crusher, playing box to box as a number 8, where he can score more goals, especially he was doing towards the end of last season, probably where you probably want to see Declan Rice. However, there's a school of thought to say that his best position is either as a lone 6 or next to one, which I disagree with. I think his best position is where he was playing last season, which consequently got him the Gunner of the Year award. On what Zubimendi has added to the midfield, well, every player is different. We have some terrific midfielders here. He brings certain hierarchy, certain composure that it's very difficult to understand. And then the way he perceives information and learns from the game and what is actually happening in the game at the speed is remarkable. And I think, again, about him, it was about unlocking certain spaces and his capacity to look further and hold a position when his teammates are further from the ball than himself. And then, yeah, if he can add goals to it, even better. Well, put it this way, he's scored, or he probably will end up scoring more goals than I would have anticipated he would in the whole season. I think he's got 2 or 3 already. And, I mean, if you were to ask me how many goals I'd think Zubimendi would score this season, I probably would have said 2 or 3. So, you know, I think he's been exceptional so far in his short Arsenal career. He's dominated the game, he's controlled things, and yeah, he's been a solid signing. Well, more than solid signing, he's been a very good, very, very good. And if there's more to come from him, a lot more. And the more he understands his teammates, the timing of that, and those relationships build, I think we'll see another level of skill in him. I think him coming into the team has made Rice's role kind of adapt, which has obviously meant that he isn't the same in an attacking sense. However, if the team as a whole is better, then you'd probably take that. But Rice is probably thinking he might have wanted, 2 or 3 more goals than he has got or done. But if the team as a whole is evolving, then you'll probably take that. On the work, we do an open play to create openings. And the other way around, football is like this. Football does not stop. It's all connected. You want to see the game like this. Okay, I don't. I think, you know what I personally think? I think we're playing within ourselves a lot of the time. I think there are, in many games, there's probably levels that we could go up, you know, sufficient to win that particular game. So, for instance, Fulham, we played at a certain level that we needed to win the game and kind of reserve energy and go to the next one. You don't want to be playing out of your skin and whipping them 4-5-0. Then you're cream crackered against, Atletico Madrid 3 days later. So I think we're doing enough to win the game and coast through it. So it's early in the season. As long as you're picking up the point, it should be all right. Against Crystal Palace, we're probably going to have to be at a certain level to win the game again. Probably a better level than we was at Fulham, but not as high as we were in midweek. And I'm confident that if we play anything like we're capable of, the result will not be in doubt. On if teams are moving towards his way of thinking, I don't know. But it doesn't mean that it's more important. It's equally important. But what happens is what happens frequently in your games. And that's the thing that you really have to dominate. The opportunity to hurt the opposition. So we have to train and make sure that the things are good for us to happen very, very often. because it will be more difficult for the opponent. But I mean, I think everybody tries to do the same. Fair play. I mean, we're a tough side to break down. We've got players that are very good at winning the ball back. Declan Rice, Timber, Calafiori, Gabriel, Saliba, very good at winning the ball back. We've got a top goalkeeper. Zubimendi is another player good at winning the ball back. However, a lot of the time it's the fact that the fans are complaining about the lack of flair. They want to see more goals. I feel like we did actually exhibit flair against Nottingham Forest, one of our best performances of the season. We also were proactive on the front foot against Newcastle in one of probably our best, arguably, one of our best performances this season. So it's like I was saying, depending on the opponent and the context of the game, we will play at that requisite level, which is enough and sufficient, which will suffice to win that game. So we will probably need to be at a certain level. We don't have to be at our highest level to beat Palace, but we'll have to be at a certain level, base level, to make sure we do win that game. On the journey of his ideas about set pieces over 10 years. No, it's not about football. It's using those moments. And if you cannot generate other moments, make sure that you use these ones. But I think it's something that relates as well to the culture of the coach, the environment, and then the players that you have. And everything has to be aligned. I mean, if you want to have a certain approach to the way you play the game, for example, we are super aggressive. You better sign and educate and train situations when the team can deliver that. Because if not, if you want to be a team that do really good high press, you better be the best in the world at tracking back. Because at some point, the ball is going to break your press. So you have to have players who are able to deliver that. So it's all in relation to what you want to do. You have to acquire and have and evolve the players in that direction. Okay, so essentially we're good from set pieces. So you're saying that we've got good set piece takers and good attackers of the ball, which is true. And I've already touched on that. On if this is phase 5. No, this is not about the phases. The phases was something else. Once again, you know, like I said, if Mikel Arteta's vague, you don't like the question. Another 2-sentence answer. On if it's possible to break Chelsea's record of 15 goals conceded. You mentioned the word if 3 times in that question. And if football, if, is too many ifs. It's so unpredictable already. So on top of that, you put ifs. This is like a riddle. Then it becomes extremely difficult to focus on the things we are doing. We are doing consistently well, and if, there's another if, we can improve them, and let's see where we are at the end of the season. I don't think I really like that question, just the fact that if is a conditional verb. But yeah, I mean, I think the players just need to focus on kind of getting through each game. I think the record will come if it comes, you know. We've got solid defenders. We're not conceding shots on goal. I think the main thing is picking up 3 points. Everything else will take care of itself. On only conceding 1 goal from open play. Obviously, it's something that is super positive. If, there's another one, it's the first time that has happened in our history. Imagine how difficult it is to do it. So yeah, we are very, very happy to be performing at that level in a really important part of the game, especially. And now it's about continuing to do it. It is indeed.